This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me remotely from an undisclosed location in Kuala Lumpur is Lin Mark. I saw your eyes roll, Lin Mark, even though I'm viewing you via Zoom video. I see you.
I deny everything. But yes, definitely a very mysterious, undisclosed location indeed. Morning, Shaoning. It's nice to speak to you, even if it is through the avenue of Zoom.
Yeah, and let's hope today technology holds up for us. But like I say, it's Friday. So how are you going to spend this weekend? Because actually for a lot of people who live in Selangor, work in Selangor, it's a public holiday today.
Yeah. So I think my family has some things planned. I'm not particularly sure. I'm just going to turn up and lend a hand and then potentially have good food. So that's my plan, in addition to sleeping.
Of course, that's highly, highly, highly important. But in the meantime, what interesting stories do we have today?
Well, later on, at about 6:45, of course, we're going to be looking at what's been in our local papers and portals. And then on the international front, after the 6:30 news, we are looking at the possibility of a no trade deal with the EU in the Brexit situation. We're talking about Brussels perhaps unveiling emergency plans, and a little bit more closely, an interesting subject. What kind of sports would you like to see included in the Olympics?
If and when it takes place.
Yes, if and when, which is a bit of a question mark right now.
I mean, are the Summer Games going to happen next year in Tokyo? I think there's a big question mark about that.
How, right? Like, how are you going to... because a lot of the games do require some level of physical closeness. How is that going to work?
And half of the fun of the Olympic Games is the spectators, right? I mean, they go into the different stadiums, they cheer their own respective country teams. I guess that feel of the Olympics won't be the same without that. But we'll see. I mean, everything is about the new normal, isn't it? I think we all have to adapt. Everything has had to adapt. In the meantime, I think first off, after these messages, we're going to be asking whether do you find yourself code switching at work? As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in just a few minutes. But first, here's Witchy Woman by The Eagles. This is The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Witchy Woman by The Eagles. Of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and I'm joined by Lin Mark today. It has just gone past 6:07. It is, of course, Friday, the 11th of December, and I'm almost wondering whether our producer chose that song in reference to me. But
I was wondering if it was in reference to me.
They're protesting over something.
We're both feeling a little bit mystical today. That's what we can go for, Shaoning.
Yeah, I hope so. But in the meantime, we're looking at this story from BBC, and it's about how young workers are changing the rules of business speak. And it's an interesting one. And it's actually, if you ask me, it's a comparison between the different generations and how they communicate in the office, right? So yeah, I definitely see that. I feel it. I understand it a little bit better. Because when I joined BFM, sadly, I was one of the older people. And the rest of the office, really young, millennials, even some Gen Zs, I think, right? And the way
they have some Gen Zs, yeah.
Yeah, and when I look at their IC numbers, I was like, oh my, this is the year I went to university.
The first time I saw an IC number that started with 00, I honestly thought it was a typo for a second. And I was like, wait, this can't be right. And they were born in 2000. Yeah. There was that moment of dissonance, right?
Yeah. But imagine me.
Yeah, totally. I can imagine a little bit. It is starting to happen to me as well. So this article in the BBC Work Life that we're looking at talks about how, particularly as we're seeing Gen Z, so those born in the year 2000 and later, as we see them start to move into the workforce, this is the generation of true digital natives, right?
Isn't it y'all? No, the millennials.
I would venture to say that it does also include kind of the latter half of the millennial generation, right? So those, because when you were born in, like, say, 1990 and above, you did have an introduction to computers, to internet technology relatively early. So, you know, kids pick things up really fast, right? And I looked at this article and I laughed because one of the examples that it gave was, you know, imagine sending a meme to your boss and, oh, I have done this. I think a bunch of us are very guilty of sending GIFs into our group team WhatsApps. And that was a little bit unusual to you, wasn't it, Xiaoning?
Y'all opened the world of GIFs to me and I happily stepped into it and have embraced it thoroughly, and I send it back to y'all.
It's fun, right?
It is fun. It is fun. I think that the important thing about business communication is that at the end of the day, the message gets across. People still mm-hmm. do the work that they're supposed to do. And sometimes maybe having a bit more of a casual communication is the way to go. So understanding when to use formal language and understanding when to use casual language, I think that's important. It can't be 100% casual all the time. So, you know, whatever said and done, when instructions need to be given, or, you know, as when we need to be clear, then that formal language needs to arise. But in the meantime, I think we can all learn to laugh at ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, so that's the thing about code splitting, right? So it's using different kinds of language or different syntax for different situations in life. You can code split even with, I had a teacher in university once point out to me that I sounded very different speaking to them because they were Westerners, right? So I had English, some professors from the UK versus to how I was spoke with my Malaysian friends, because then, you know, the las and the mas and everything would come out. And so that is also a form of code splitting, because that is, you are utilizing a different kind, a sort of a different subsection of the language to suit a different situation. And I think it's probably not that code splitting has never happened in the workplace, because as you said, you know, there are casual situations and there are formal situations. It's just that the casual situations have maybe the language used in those situations has maybe evolved significantly with the addition of this digital aspect of it, right? And is it making its way into formal communication, or has formal communication roughly stayed the same, do you think, Xiaoning?
I think there's a bit of a middle ground here. There's no, you know, like that shift towards more casual communication. If I observe the last, let's say, well, oh my goodness, more than 20 years of work, definitely over time, things have been a lot more casual. Relationships in the office are a little bit more relaxed, not so formal. When I first joined, everything was extremely formal. Everything was very professional. And I don't actually want to go back to those days. I don't think we were better for it. But I also understand sometimes from a professional perspective, sometimes you do need to have that mm-hmm. formality. So it cannot also be completely ignored. But the problem I have is meeting that generational gap sometimes. And I am guilty of this. I put my hand up, especially when I'm communicating instructions, I can come across as a bit harsh and very abrupt, because then I revert back to my old self, you know, 20 to 25 years ago when I first started work and people wrote very like professional, formal, like letters. It wasn't even emails, guys. It was letters, right? And then that kind of thing somehow doesn't resonate so well. And I think also in the industry that we are in, which is media, right? So everyone's kind of like a bit more chitty chatty. But I think definitely, I think we can be a little bit more open to each other in terms of how we communicate, and also recognize that, hey, we can also learn to be a little bit formal in the meantime. But let us know what you think. Have you had generational gaps in your communication with your colleagues? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, it's Friday, the 11th of December, and yes, the start to what I hope is a very nice weekend. But next is this very interesting article in the Conversation about the Olympic Games and the adding of new sports. So it's entitled Breakdancing in the Olympics. The Games have a long history of taking chances. From Pesapalo, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, to kite flying. What was the interesting thing about this article, Lynn? Did you even know about half of these games?
I'd heard that breakdancing was going to be included in the Olympics. And this is not the 2021 Olympics. Yeah, this would be the 2024 Games in Paris. But even then, I think 2021 if it goes through, it is set to have a bunch of new sports like surfing, skateboarding, karate, sport climbing as well. So, you know, we were just talking about how the introduction of digital natives into the workforce was changing how we communicate, right? Well, it's also changing the games. So, this raised an interesting question for me of what other sports could potentially be included in the games, right? Because the Olympic Games has a history of including some odd things. I think if I'm not mistaken, it was pre-1900s or early 1900s that they had things like cannon firing, pigeon shooting.
Not very acceptable games, I think, those today.
It would be really interesting to see which of these make it back, right? I can't remember which games it was now. Our Malaysian team did well in petanque, which was something that I'd never heard of up until that point. It's kind of like a game where you throw these little, I believe they are metal balls onto a sandpit. I'm not explaining it very well because I don't really know how it works, but I know there's a petanque arena in KL. I've driven past it every once in a while. So, you know, there's always interesting new sports. And pesäpallo, which you mentioned, I also don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It's apparently a Finnish version of baseball. Mm. And it was a demonstration sport that they had. So, you know, demonstration sports, they give you a medal, happy, but it's not really included in the tally. It's meant to highlight the culture of the country that the games are held in.
Yeah, I think the purpose of all this is, I think, the Olympics Committee. They always have a look at what games they have because it's to kind of appeal to and staying relevant to younger audiences, right? And they try and keep in mind the changing, like I would say, suppose trends of sports. Is that the right word? Sports at the end of the day, although some of them don't look like sports anymore, like breakdancing to me, that baffles me. But I do know there's a lot of skill involved in all this. At the end of the day, whether it's games that we have never heard of, you do need to have a certain global standard. You would have put in many, 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 many hours of practice to perfect your skills. But not everybody is happy about this, though. Some people question, why are we including some of these games? They don't look really, really like what I said, sports or relevant. I guess there's no right or wrong answer when it comes to including sports. But I have a bugbear. Where's squash in all this?
Absolutely. So there are some games like squash, netball as well is not included in the Olympics. They are widely played. They do have a significant following. But they still haven't been included in the games. So there's been some complaints on that front. Like, why is breakdancing now included in the Olympics, but not squash? And of course, you also do have the purists who are saying that, yeah, these are a fad. Why are we including them in a games that the Olympics that have such a long history? Is it going to continue to be recognized as and popularized as a sport? So there's a lot of criticism, I think, now being leveled at this. But I kind of just take it in the spirit of get more people interested in watching the Olympics, right? Because
yes. At
the end of the day, it is a showcase of sportsmanship and it's a showcase of skill. And you can't really do anything but celebrate that, right? And hopefully we do in some near future see squash included in the Olympic Games as well as any other games that have been left out for a long time.
Well, let us know what you think. What other games besides squash, that's my personal one, would you like included in the Olympic Games or even in the Winter Games? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Just Like Heaven by The Cure. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Xiaoning, and I'm here with Lin Mark on The Morning Run, and that was Scar Tissue by Red Hot Chili Peppers. It has just gone past 6:40 in the morning, and it's Friday, 11th of December. And of course, we've had some interesting conversations so far. But now we're looking at what's happening around the world. And of course, we're going to have a little bit of a stop in Europe because time is running out for the UK and the EU to reach a trade deal. Now, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has ordered ministers in the UK to prepare for the strong possibility of a no-deal Brexit. Now, we know Johnson made the trip to Brussels for high-level talks with Chief of European Commission Ursula von der Leyen. However, they seem to have failed to bridge major gaps despite having, a nice meal of scallops. Maybe that was in overtures to the fishing issues that they can't resolve. And Johnson says that the EU's current offer was unacceptable because the UK and the EU could not be treated like twins.
Interesting comments. Well, we spoke to a public policy analyst last week who reminded us why the deal is quite so difficult to strike. Brexit was this move towards sovereignty. So that's why even this issue of fisheries, which you brought up, Shaning, you know, fisheries doesn't contribute much to the UK's GDP at all. It's so hotly contested this time around. It's very political. And you can listen to that podcast on BFM.my. It's called Breaking Up is Harder Than the UK Thought. Downing Street has said that the British Prime Minister has overwhelming cabinet support for his stance, though. Interestingly, official forecasts suggest, though, a no-deal Brexit would knock an extra 2% of GDP off an economy which has already been hit hard by the COVID crisis.
Yeah, and even we look at the pound against the ringgit this morning, it has somewhat depreciated. The pound against the ringgit at the moment is 5.3988. I think earlier this week it was above 5.4. So clearly I think there's some nervousness as to whether UK will really, really end up leaving the European Union without a deal. And meanwhile, the European Commission themselves, they have published their own contingency plan for a no-deal outcome. And this includes allowing airlines from UK to operate flights across its territory and keeping roads open to British hauliers for 6 months, but only if the UK reciprocates. I think, of course, there's going to be question marks about whether the Europe will remain the financial centre hub of, you know, if London will remain the financial hub of Europe, and whether it can still be, you know, in the past it used to be the gateway to Europe. But with Brexit, I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. Meanwhile, we bring the conversation closer to home, Japan. Now, they have reported record daily number of COVID-19 cases. Authorities are now urging people not to travel in the upcoming holiday season, and there are nearly 3,000 cases were reported on Wednesday.
So similarly, South Korea is also now grappling with a new surge. Although at one point it had new daily cases of as low as 2 per day, the country's reported nearly 700 new infections yesterday. I think South Korea has been hit by, 4 waves of infections since January? But officials say the latest surge is by far the hardest to control since it doesn't involve mass clusters that health officials can target and trace. And this is the nightmare, right? Because once you have COVID-19 transmission throughout the community with no definitive source, it becomes incredibly difficult for officials to keep track of this. I mean, here at home, luckily, fortunately, right now, we are still in cluster stage. But nevertheless, we also reported a record high yesterday, 2,234 cases.
Yeah, I think it's a very good reminder that we still have to maintain all the standing, you know, the SOPs. Keep that physical distancing, wash our hands, wear a mask at all time. Even though vaccines appear to be in the horizon for everyone, it doesn't mean that we can just let go on, you know, on that pedal for just a moment. And if you do, this is what happens. Clusters form, infection cases rise, and that's an unfortunate circumstance. And it's probably going to be the case that we're going to have to maintain these SOPs at least until the middle of the year. Meanwhile, a country that's a little bit more optimistic and is trying to open itself out to the rest of the world is Thailand.
Now, trying is the operative word.
Yeah, trying. So their finance minister told the Financial Times that the country should rebound from the shock dealt by COVID-19 and be ready to open to the outside world by the second half of 2021. Now, he acknowledged that months of protests have been taking place, although that the impact was limited. But I think for Thailand, it's pretty critical when you think that tourism industry accounts for 18% of their GDP. And like all of us, we are also hoping that travel becomes the norm soon because I think we all kind of miss it. There's a bit of cabin fever going on. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. And of course, this is the morning run. It has just gone past 6:50 in the morning. It's Friday, the 11th of December. And that song was Guilty by Lady Ray, which probably, you know, a lot of people might feel today. At least some of our politicians who have been told to behave themselves a little bit. And this little bit of rebuke came, and it's on the front page of the New Straits Times. And it's a royal rebuke because at the swearing-in ceremony of the new Perak Menteri Besar, Datuk Sarani Mohamad, yesterday, Sultan Nazrin of Perak censured political leaders for failing to run the state in the best way possible for the people. He said, three such ceremonies since GE14, he pointed out, are not something to be proud of. And yes, they are guilty of that.
Yes, he's definitely made his point. And I think looking at the Malay Mail, the Perak Menteri Besar crisis is also their lead story. But this is coming from PASA's info chief, who in a dialogue with his UMNO counterpart, Sharil Hamdan, he called the Perak MB crisis a storm in a teacup and added that the no confidence motion raised by UMNO assemblymen against Dato' Sri Ahmad Faizal Azumu, that wouldn't have led to a bigger crisis that would have jeopardized their national pact. So this is according to PASA information chief Kamaruzaman Mohammed. But speaking of info chiefs, Shaning, you had a very interesting conversation with Sharil Hamdan himself, as well as PKR's info chief, Fahmi Fazil, yesterday.
Yes, and we did bring up JASA, which, by the way, has had its allocation halved in Parliament yesterday. So originally, it was proposed 85.5 million. It has now been reduced to 40 million. But of course, the opposition continue to question it in the first place. Why does it need to be revived, right? Is it necessary? Or will it really carry out its duties? And in the past, it has been accused of being almost a propaganda unit.
Basically, the ultimate thing is here that we want people want transparency, right? And sometimes the way that our national budgets have been allocated, it is very opaque and people are left to question and wonder and suspect the worst. So yes, you know, more information would be great about this information department. But also looking at Malaysia Kini this morning, there is a story here about Pejuang on their top story. Pejuang is hauling the Registrar of Societies to court over delays in their registration as a party. So Pejuang apparently submitted their registration back in October, but haven't yet to receive a response. So they are now trying to compel the ROS to make a decision whether, you know, whether it's yay or nay that they have been registered. And they have also looking for a declaration that the failure to respond to any application was ill-intentioned. So that's going to be quite interesting to see how that plays out, particularly since Pejuang, you know, there's talk about Pejuang being the kingmaker in all of these political machinations.
With their four MPs.
With their four MPs.
But clearly, because the House is so divided, right? You're talking 222 seats and it's probably quite evenly split in the middle. Mm-hmm. Those four seats do become very important at the end of the day. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the front page of the Malaysian Reserve and I think the headline is something obvious, which is businesses want clear and fair SOPs. So while the retail segment finds relief, others like wedding and event companies say they've been left out in the dark. And yeah, you know, in this race to flatten the pandemic curve, some businesses have clearly felt it more than others. But what's really important is, I think, clearer communication, clearer rules so that businesses can still, you know, continue. So for example, some of these changes, I think, also baffled us, right, initially, like two people in the car, three people in the car, and then now no limit. You know, now apparently no restrictions in terms of the number of people on a table in a restaurant, but still some requirements as to distance, right?
We may as well honestly have just called it something other than a CMCO, because every iteration of the CMCO has been different. So really, you know, what's the point of giving it the same name? Everyone just gets confused. But anyway, I mean, Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob has come out to clarify these, the new SOPs. So hopefully, at the same time, everyone maintains their physical distancing and their hand hygiene, because we don't want yet more cases of COVID-19. But in the meantime, you know, the economy has suffered as a result of these control orders, and people are pressed for cash. here on the front page of the CEO Morning Brief, the Bank Negara has warned of unethical advice to punt your EPF savings on risky investments, you know, for the lure of a quick return. So apparently, especially since the government has kind of allowed people who have seen a pay cut or a pay deferral, to actually withdraw savings from their, both their accounts one and accounts two, there are some people who are being, who have become the recipients of bad financial advice or, you know, encouragement to, invest in this super, you know, rewarding scheme that's going to give you great returns, you know, practically no risk. There's no such thing.
No such right? thing. There's absolutely never no such thing as a free lunch. If it sounds too good to be true, likely to be true. But very quickly, there's also a headline in Star Biz, which is getting GST right. So experts suggest that it be reintroduced at 4% from 2022. As we know, our tax base is too shallow. So maybe something that it will be considered in the coming years. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Carlos Casanova, senior economist for Asia at UBP, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's Nightclub by The Specials. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.